All right, good evening, Aphelous and Chanukah. All right, so much to talk about in Chanukah. Let's start with a couple of questions. Some of them more common than others. We'll throw out some popular Chanukah questions and then work through an approach to a bunch of these. Number one, possibly the biggest question of all, is asked often year after year, and that is, what's the necessity of this big miracle of the menorah burning, of the oil which lasted for 8 days, which is, of course, at the center of our observance of Chanukah, is the mitzvah to light the menorah. We know, of course, in lighting the menorah is to commemorate the fact that the Gemara says they only found one little flask of oil and it lasted for 8 days. As you all know, that miracle is entirely unnecessary. It was unnecessary as far as the salvation of the Jewish people goes. That wasn't necessary. The war was the primary focal point of the Chanukah story, that we were able to kick the Greeks back out and take over the Beit HaMikdash and Eretz Yisrael. Even halachically speaking, the commentators all point out that they would have been permitted to use defiled oil under the circumstances that existed at the time. It would have been totally fine. It wasn't that they weren't going to have a menorah and now they did. They would have had it with impure oil. It would have been there. Why was it necessary? What's the significance of this miracle of the oil, that it plays such a central role in our observance of Chanukah? The Gemara makes such a big deal about it when it wasn't what we would call a necessary type miracle, when you compare it to the miracle, say, of being saved in the war, or certainly the miracle, say, of a Purim. Second question is based on a statement that the sages make. It's a statement that's found in all the Sfarim, all the books when we talk about Chanukah. They talk about this statement from the sages. The sages went back to the very first first pasuk in the Chumash, Bereishis, Borei Elokim, Hashamayim, Yetzer, really the second verse. It was a total chaotic experience. It was dark in the depths of void. And they attribute of those of the four words in the very beginning there of Sohu, Vavohu, and Choshech, and Tahom, and those words, descriptive words, each one is representative of a different exile, a different golus that the Jewish people would suffer through. And without going through all of them now, which are not relevant to us, they took the word Choshech. The sages saw in the word Choshech, that it was darkness, which the Torah describes in the beginning of creation, and the sages say, the Choshech al Pnei Sahom, it was darkness over the face of the waters of the depths, Zu Golos Yovan Harasha. This word darkness is a reference to the exile that the Jewish people suffered at the hands of Yovan, the Greek people, during our Chanukah story. And the sages say, why was it called Choshech? What is it that the sages saw in the word darkness, that it was indicative or representative of the exile that the Jewish people would suffer at the hands of the Greeks? Shechshicha einayim shel Yisrael b'gzeiroseha, that they literally blackened or covered the eyes of the Jewish people through their gzeiros, through their decrees, preventing us from doing all the things that we needed to do, the learning of the Torah, keeping of Shabbos and of the mitzvos. Then the sages say in interesting language, what did the Greeks do in covering our eyes, so to speak, blackening our eyes, covering our vision? Oimos lahan, they told us, the Greeks told the Jewish people, Kisvu lachan al keren hashor, write on the horn of an ox, of a shore. What should you write? Take from an ox and write on its horn, She'ein lachem chelech be'elokei Yisrael, that you have no portion in the God of the Jewish people. That's what the sages say about the golus of Yavon, the Greek exile, sort of indicated, the sages say, by the Greeks telling the Jewish people to take the horn of a shore, of an ox, and write on it, we have no portion in the God of the Jewish people. Now, we're going to talk a lot about this, but what the commentators all point out is, what's the reference, what are they hinting at when they told us to write this statement on the horn of a shore? Why did they tell us to do that? It was a reference to the other famous calf in the annals of Jewish history, and that was one of the Cheta Egel, the sin of the golden calf. And it was a remez, a hint toward that the Greeks were saying, right on the horn of the shore of the ox, hinting at the sin of the golden calf, and on that horn, right, we have no portion, we have no chelek in the God of the Jewish people. That will need an explanation. What's the meaning of that the sages saw in that statement, a summary of the exile that we would have during this exile? Start with those questions. That's what's on the table. Why is it necessary to have had such a miracle? Why do we need this miracle of light? And two, what's this understanding that the sages have that the Greek exile is somehow affiliated with the writing on the horn of a shore, of an ox? We have no portion in the Jewish people. Put those aside. Let's work through another medrash, another statement of the sages. A very perplexing statement. You have to follow this through. It's a statement in the Yalkut Shimoni, one of the medrashim on Sefer Melachim, in the book of Navi, Sefer Melachim. The sages have the following statement to say, and this will be the focal point of the talk for the rest of the evening, understanding and breaking down what the sages have to say here. So we'll follow this through. The sages say as follows. The sages are going to be working through a comparison of sorts to the very first Mishkan, the tabernacle which was constructed in the desert. So as you know, the Jewish people were working through the 40 years of the desert. In the very beginning, they constructed a tabernacle, and there's much time spent in the Torah describing both its construction, the way that it was needed to be done, both in terms of the laws dictating how it's constructed, and then in the actual putting it together. And then there was a big process in which there was an 8-day Yemei HaMiluim, in which there were special sacrifices offered, and there was a whole to-do while they actually erected this Mishkan on the 8th day, following 7 days of service. Then they actually put up the Mishkan, and that was the tabernacle in the desert. The Medrash says as follows. When did the Mishkan actually, when was it erected? When did it go up? So the Torah is clear on the first day of the month of Nisan. Nisan, of course, the month that we celebrate Pesach in the beginning of the springtime. That was when the tabernacle was actually erected and used for the first time. Medrash says as follows, however. Amar Reb Chanina, the Kafhei B'Kislev, on the 25th day of Kislev, which is 5 to 6 months earlier than Pesach time, it's in the middle of the winter time as we experience it, the Kafhei B'Kislev Nigmar Melechas HaMishkan. When did the Jewish people, the artisans and all the people brought in to construct, when did they complete the materials to put up the Mishkan, the building of all the walls and all the things that went into it? On the 25th day of Kislev, but we celebrate, of course, as Chanukah. So also in the Kupol Ad Echad V'Nisan, but it was sort of put aside until the first day of Nisan, months later. Medrash says, how do I know that it was not erected until the month of Nisan? Because it says explicitly in the Torah, V'yom HaChodesh HaRishon Be'echad HaChodesh, on the first day of the first month, that's when you should put it up. Hayu Yisroel Mimal Min Al Moshe, and the Jewish people had complaints on Moshe Rabbeinu. What's going on? We built the Mishkan. We get this commandment. Vasuli Mikdash. Why? Vishachanti Visoichon. I'll dwell in your midst in this Mishkan. We go through all this. We donate all of our gold. We put all the materials necessary. The artisans go to work under Bezalel. We finish the job. And it sits for months. It just sits unused, not even erected. Shemla Daifi Irabo, maybe there's a problem, some reason, says the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Choshov La'arev Simchos HaMishkan. Hashem specifically wanted to wait to combine the joy that would be in the erection of the Mishkan, B'chodesh Shenolad Bo Yitzchak, with the month that Yitzchak was born in. So that we have a Mishkan, all the materials are sitting right there, everything you need to build your house, it's ready. And Hashem says the Medrash, not yet. Not ready? Can't have it. What are we waiting for? We're waiting for Nisan. Why Nisan? The Medrash doesn't even say it as Nisan. What's so special about the month of Nisan that we're waiting for? That's Yitzchak's month. Yitzchak was born in the month of Nisan. The Medrash says, and how do we know that? Because when the angels came to visit Avraham, Avraham says to Sarah, Lushi va'asi ugot, go knead some special cakes, which the sages understood were really matzahs, which of course takes place in the month of Nisan, and the angel said, in a year from now, Shoiva Shuvailacha, I'll return to you. So we mentioned that we know that Yitzchak was born in the month of Nisan. We know that the Mishkan was completed on the 25th of Kislev. Why does Hashem say, don't put it up until the first day of Nisan, 5-6 months later? That's Yitzchak's month. Umeata Hifsid Kislev. However, Kislev, what's going to be with the month of Kislev? Kislev is now feeling all left out. It was the day, 25th of Kislev, that it was actually completed, and yet nothing happened. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Alai L'Shalem. I will fill that void. I will make up for this lack in the month of Kislev. Ma shilei mo atodesh baruch hu. What did Hashem do? Chanukos beis chashmunoi. The Chanukos habayis, the rededication of the beis hamikdash in the times of the chashmonoim of Chanukah. Ad kan, this is the end of the Medrash. So there's a lot to talk about here, we'll hopefully get to all of it. But just in summary, so the Medrash says, Chazal tell us, the original Mishkan back in the Midbar in the desert of the Jewish people in their first, at the end of their first year of the Mishkan was constructed on the 25th of Kislev, was specifically delayed until the first day of the month of Nisan, the reason giving Yitzchak's month. And in replacement of the lack that Kislev had, that even though it was initially Zocha, privileged to merit the completion of the Mishkan, but nothing happened, Shem says, you'll have something, the Chanukos Beis Chashmonoi. Now, before we get into this Medrash, we need to start with the last phrase of this Medrash. The last phrase, which defines this time of Hanukkah as a Chanukos Beis Chashmonoi. That we have this idea that during this Chanukah story, there was a Chanukah Sabayis, there was a dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. That it was not just part of the event, but that there was a central part of the story is what we would call a Chanukah Sabayis. A Chanukah Sabayis, literally we use that phrase all the time. Every time an institution puts up a new building, you're invited to a Chanukah Sabayis. We make a big deal, a dedication of a building. That's what the word Chinuch means, dedicating something, preparing it for its future use. And the Medrash defines that what happened in the Chanukah story was a Chanukah of the Beis HaMikdash. It was a dedication process of the Beis HaMikdash. Now I just want to stop here and point out the significance of this. If I ask you, why do we call Chanukah Chanukah? Where does the name Chanukah come from? Well, what's the reason that everybody knows? Well, that's already more fancy. Most people would answer Chanu Chafei. That they rested on the 25th. That's said over. Never heard that? That's what's said over. No? Well, alright. Well, there are several reasons given for the reason of Hanukkah. The one which I always remembered, so I know it's for me, I learned something new when you're going to go the opposite way around. What was obvious to me was new. Anyway, one of the reasons given is that Hanukkah is broken up, those five letters, into two words. Chanu, which means to rest or to stop. Chafei. On the 25th, that the Jewish people, so to speak, rested or stopped the battle, were victorious over the Greeks on the 25th of the month, and therefore it was named Chanukah, which is just one long, putting that all together into the word Chanukah. That's a reason given by the Ran, one of the Rishonim, in the Gemara in Shabbos, when the Gemara discusses Chanukah, the Ran comments, why is it called Chanukah? Because of that, they rested on the 25th. Now, not all the commentators agree to that interpretation. The Maharsha, for example, the Maharsha was a classic commentator, in, I believe in the 1600s, who wrote on all of the Gemara. He's printed in the back of every single tractate of the Talmud. In the back of the tractates, you'll find the comments of the Maharsha. He writes as follows. Why is it called Chanukah? Because in the Beis Chashmonah, in the times of the Chashmonaim, when they entered into the Beis HaMikdash, Yignizu Avnei Mizbeach, they destroyed, upended, uprooted the stones, the actual unit that made up the utensils and vessels of the Beis HaMikdash and of the Mizbeach specifically, the altar that all these sacrifices were offered on, Sheshaketsu Onshei Avodas Gilulim LaAvodazar, because they had become contaminated, shakates from the language like the of the despicable, like the bug, the creepy crawly Shkatzim V'Ramashim, it had become defiled by the Greeks and all of their idol worship that they had offered on the holy Mizbeach. So in the Chashmonaim, when the Kohanim entered in, they saw a Mizbeach, an altar, which had been defiled. It had been used for Avodah Zarah, as if it had been raped in front of them. This altar had been used to sacrifice to that. They didn't just like polish it up and then start using it again. They destroyed it, says the Maharsha. The Hutzrichu Livnos Mizbeach Chadosh, and they built a new one. They got rid of it. We can't use this. This is not for us. Upended, uprooted, took care of the old Mizbeach, and they built a new altar. Ulekach Nikra Chanukah. That's why he says this is called Chanukah, because a Chanukah means a Chanukah Sabai, a rededication of the Mizbeach. And the discussion in the Gemara of Chanukah, he writes, is discussing why we have the mitzvah of the candles, side topic that for us tonight. The name Chanukah, says the Maharsha, is because there was a dedication. The whole name of this yontif, of this concept that we're going through now of Chanukah, is because the Jewish people, the Kohanim, came in and they literally rebuilt the kelim, the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. The Mizbeach was brand new. It needed to be dedicated, just like a new, when the Mizbeach initially was constructed by Shlomo, there was a big Chanukah on the Mizbeach. When the Mishkan, when the Tabernacle was constructed in the desert, there was a Chanukah on Mishkan. And when the second Beis HaMikdash was rededicated, because they got rid of the old and brought in the new, you have a new Chanukah on the Mizbeach. Others say the same thing. That's where the root of the name Chanukah comes from. So just putting that back into the Medrash, so you now have two Chanukah HaMizbeach, so to speak, discussed in the Medrash. The first was the erection of the initial tabernacle, which was completed on the 25th of Kislev, yet delayed until the month that Yitzchak was born in terms of where they actually erected and constructed the Mishkan. And the Medrash says, but that was completed, the Kislev, which was now lacking from this Mishkan, didn't have anything done, and the month of Kislev was filled in during the Chanukah story with a exactly parallel Chanukah Sabayis. There was a construction, a dedication of the Mizbeach during the Chanukah story, exactly parallel to what had taken place 1,000 years earlier during the time that the Jewish people were in the Midbar. So far, so good. Okay, so now we need to take apart this Medrash. What's the meaning? What is the meaning of that the initial Mishkan in the Midbar had to have a pause button put on it until the month that Yitzchak was born? Why do we need Yitzchak's month to somehow allow for the Mishkan to be constructed? And how then, whatever was necessary for the Mishkan during the times in the desert, apparently we weren't able to construct it in the desert on our own. We somehow needed the merit of Yitzchak. So whatever that was, that we needed Yitzchak's merit to complete the process of the Mishkan, to go from a bunch of pieces of wood in its form to put it up, how come we did not need that during the Chanukah story? We're there, Shem says, no problem, I'll fill it in over there, there you'll have it. So what's the difference between the first and the second, that the first needs the merit of Yitzchak and the second one does not? Those will be the questions now that we will move forward into. Okay. What's the point of a Mishkan? What is the absolute, when you pare it down to its essence. Why do we have a Mishkan and the significance of that? Exactly. Right? You going to say that? Something else? So say your own thought.
I was going to say, we need a focal point of where to approach.
We need a focal point. The Pasuk itself says, V'asu li mikdash, built for me a tabernacle, a home, v'shachanti v'soichan, and I will dwell in your midst. The idea of what's known as the Hashras HaShechina, that the Shechina should literally be part of the Jewish people, should be in our midst in a palpable, tangible kind of way. You could feel it, you could sense it. The Mishkan was the home, the source, where you could perceive the concept of the Shechina more than anywhere else. And the ultimate purpose of that is embodied in the concept of having such a Mishkan. It's a focal point for us, and it's a place where the Shechina, so to speak, was there. The tragedy of the Chet HaEgel, the tragedy of the golden calf, which you mentioned in the beginning, is in that sin, in that Aveira, in that shortcoming, we lost that base, we lost that Hashras HaShechina. That caused the inability of the Jewish people to have that closeness, that presence of Hashem in their midst. Now, however we will learn the parsha, the concept, the story of the Chet HaEgel, and it's of course a shmooze unto itself exactly what went wrong, how many people were involved. Whatever it was that they did, they were channeling their avodas Hashem. They were channeling what should have been their focused service of Hashem through something else. That, whether it was true avodah zara, it was just an intermediary, whatever it was a diversion of focus and attention north-south, the way that it was supposed to be, and it took a detour through this Egel Hazav, through this golden calf. In that sin, in that idea of the Jewish people being distracted, so to speak, taken away from their focus, and total dedication directly to the Ribono Shel Olam, directly to Hashem, in that sin, the Jewish people lost that Jewish presence, the presence of the Shechina in their midst of the Mishkan. The Vilna Gaon writes, the Gra writes, now there's a dispute between Rashi and the Ramban exactly when the commandment for the Mishkan was given. Was it given after the Chet HaEgel, only as a result of the sin, were they told to build the Mishkan, or even before? And the Gaon goes with the approach that they were told beforehand. Before the Chet HaEgel, they were already commanded to build the Mishkan, and they were going to have the presence of the Shechina. The Chet HaEgel caused us to lose that ability, caused us no longer to have that privilege of the Shechina. Now, when you go through the entire story of the Chet HaEgel, which we're not going to spend that much time on it, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up and davens twice. Davens for 40 days for the people not to be destroyed. And then he goes up again for another 40 days to receive the Torah, because when he came down, he broke the Luchos. He goes up for another 40 days to receive the second set of Luchos. And it's only upon coming down after that second set of 40 days is there a completion in the process that the Jewish people have been forgiven, evidenced by the fact that they had now been given the second set of Luchos. The Vilna Gaon writes, what were the Jewish people doing? What was Moshe Rabbeinu doing up there for 40 days, davening and davening and davening? What was he davening for the 40 days? Says the Vilna Gaon, only lahachzir hashchina, to return the Shechina to the Jewish people. That idea that the Chet HaEgel would cause that loss, would cause us to be separated from that presence, from the concept of a home in which Hashem's presence would be so strong, that was Moshe's sole focal point of all of his tefillahs during that time, just to be able to bring that back. The Vilna Gaon understands that when, as I mentioned, that at the end of that second set of 40 days, anyone, what day was the end of the 40 days? When did Moshe Rabbeinu come back down on? On Yom Kippur. Following that, they were given the command again, Va'asuli Mikdash, to reconstruct the Mishkan. Following the final completion of the forgiveness process, when he comes down, they began collecting all the gold again and the silver. They start making it on the 15th of that month. So Yom Kippur is on the 10th. On the 15th of Tishrei, they began construction of the Mishkan. And the Vilna Gaon, right, that's why we have the Yontif of Sukkot, because Sukkot represents that Shechina returning to the Jewish people in the construction of the Mishkan, which they had been allowed to begin again based on the forgiveness that they had achieved on Yom Kippur. Just a little sidebar. To further this point, I just want to share with you two Rashis. This idea that the Chet HaEgel was so central in us losing the presence of the Shechina, and that forgiveness of the Chet HaEgel is what's going to give us back the ability to reconstruct the Mishkan and bring back the Shechina into our midst. Rashi writes, in the beginning of Parshas Pekudei, is the very last Parsha in Sefer Shmos. So the Parsha begins, Elu Pekudei HaMishkan. These are the numbers, the calculations of the tabernacle. Mishkan HaEdus. And then the Torah defines this Mishkan, this tabernacle, as a tabernacle of testimony. A Mishkan HaEdus. Eidus is testimony. And somehow this is a Mishkan of testimony. Rashi writes, what is the testimony that the Mishkan represents? What is the Mishkan testifying to? Says Rashi, Eidus liYisrael, it is a testimony to the Jewish people, Shevitir lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Ma'aseh HaEgel, that Hashem has forgiven them on the Chet HaEgel. So that the Mishkan was a physical manifestation, or a statement that Hashem makes to the Jewish people, I've forgiven you on the Chet HaEgel. And therefore it's defined as a tabernacle of testimony that you've been forgiven, because here I am going to Shaharei Hishra Shechinasa B'Soichem Hashem. Because you'll see, I will have my Shechina, I'll have my divine presence once again resting in your midst. Later in Parsha Shemini, the Torah describes the 8-day process of putting up the tabernacle. And when at the completion of the process, the Torah describes this event at several different times in the Chumash. So in the middle of Parsha Shemini, the Torah actually describes the process of this 8-day sacrificial process that everybody brought, and the Kohanim and Moshe were involved. And for 7 days, the Torah describes the Mishkan was not able to be erected, and only on the 8th day was it finally completed. And Rashi comments, Shekol Zayin Imei HaMiluim, during this first 7 days, when they were going through the process of getting ready for the construction of the tabernacle, Shehamidu Moshe LeMishkan, every day Moshe would erect the Mishkan, the Shimeshbo, and he would serve in it, and at the end of the day, Upirko B'chol Yom, And then he would take it down at the end of that process. That was for 7 days. He would put it up, serve in it, take it down. Lo sharso boishchina. For all 7 of those days, as it was put up, and Moshe would serve in it, and then take it back down, the Shechina never came down to rest in the, until its final 8th day. But for the first 7 days, Rashi comments, the Shechina never came down to rest in the Mishkan. The Jewish people were entirely downtrodden. They were entirely, they weren't sure what to do with themselves. The Oimru L'Moshe Rabbeinu, Kol HaToyrech SheTorachnu, everything that we toiled for, SheTishra Shechina Beinenu, V'Neidosh in Iskapi Lo Avon Ha'ego, hasn't happened yet. All of the difficulty, all we've done so much to get us back to that stage of Moshe, what's going on? 7 days, you're putting it up, you're working in it, taking it down, the Shechina hasn't come. Says the Jewish people to Moshe, all the toil that we've done for what? Shehishra Shechina, to let us know that we've been forgiven, hasn't happened yet. And it wasn't until the 8th day, it was permanently erected, and at that point the Shechina came up. But Rashi comments again, what was the fear of the Jewish people when they saw that for 7 days Moshe was working in it, and the Shechina hadn't come? Says Rashi, we don't know, Shenedosh in Iskapir Lonu Avon Ha'ega. We have no proof without the Shechina that we've been forgiven from the chet of the ego. Now, putting this back in the Medrash, all of this had to be completed in the month of Nisan. When is this final process of the Mishkan being able to be erected and the Shechina coming in? What month does it have to happen in? Month of Nisan. And why the month of Nisan? Yitzchak. Why Yitzchak? Maral explains as follows. Maral is talking about a different subject. He is describing why the first Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says, was destroyed because of the 3 cardinal sins of Gilui Arayos, of illicit relationships, and Shvichas Damim, and murder, and Avodah Zarah, and idol worship. Those were the reasons why the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. Maral discusses why that should be, what's the difference between the first and the second. Not a topic for us. But in his discussion of the first Beis HaMikdash, which was destroyed because of the big 3, murder, idol worship, and illicit relationships, the Maral expresses that the first Beis HaMikdash was corresponding or in the merit of the 3 avos of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And he describes how each one of them relates to one of those sins, or in rectifying one of those sins is what they stood for. And when the Jewish people fell in each one of those 3, the Beis HaMikdash fell with it. What's relevant to us is the personage of Yitzchak. What does Yitzchak represent? Says the Maharal as follows. The Bayis HaRishon was Bischus Gimel Avos. And the 3 Avos, Asher Madre Gosson, the Vada Yoyser El Yonim, whose levels, they were much higher than the Jewish. We don't know, we can't even discuss the Avos, they were on such a level. The Yitzchak, what was Yitzchak's specific contribution amongst the 3 Avos? Zuchuso HaHarchoka Me Avodah Zarah. Yitzchak's specific contribution, says the Maharal, was distance, total separation from idol worship. Why and how do we see that Yitzchak represents that? Shoharei Masar Nafsho LeHakrova El Hashem Yisparach. Because he gave of his life. He was Moser Nefesh, gave of everything that he had to be himself a sacrifice to Hashem, representing my whole life, my essence is dedicated to you. What is Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah is that same problem that we had with the Chet HaEgel, with the golden calf. It's a diversion of our attention. Avodah Zarah is always referred to in the writings of the sages as being analogous to adultery. In the human realm, you have a relationship, a pact between a husband and a wife, and when one of the partners is not faithful to that pact, is diverted from full and total attention to his or her partner, the adulterous relationship is giving that attention, that love, that whatever my essence might be, to something else. Although the Zohar is always referred to in the words of the sages as analogous to that concept. It's adulterous. You're giving your attention, which is supposed to be entirely dedicated to me, and you're giving of your energy, your time, your resources to something else. So Yitzchak represents the farthest distance possible, the source and the strength with which the Jewish people draw our future strength from, not to be caught up in Avodah Zarah. Yitzchak is Gibor, is Gevurah, strength, focused entirely on the service of Hashem. I'll give my entire life for you. I will sit there on the altar, not move an inch. If that's what you want, That's what I'll do. The exact opposite of someone who falls with Avodah Zarah, Yitzchak is the opposite of that. So the morale, again, he's describing a different concept. The contribution that Yitzchak made to the Beis HaMikdash was in that pillar of idolatry, that he was a pillar, meaning on the good side of idolatry, and he goes through where Avram and Yaakov fit in. But Yitzchak was that strength of total dedicated worship to Hashem, at the level of Mesiras Nefesh, literally giving of his soul to that. Yeah.
Because
we're not. It's not a matter of whether or not he was going to be murdered or not. It's a matter of his participation in that event was total dedication, and therefore that would fit with that.
The total dedication is eclipsed by a total not dedication.
Right. So the Avodah Zarah is a distraction in my focus. Avodah Zarah is a diversion of my energy and attention to something else. Which, by the way, even though you all know that the desire, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah has long been banished from the world, we all still suffer from this. We don't divert our attention to other powers in the world, the stars, the moon, the constellations, that we don't divert our attention to, but there are lots of other things that we do divert our attention to. We give of our energy, which has nothing to do with the service of Hashem, and all of that has its roots in this concept of Avodah Zarah. It's all the same idea of saying it's an adulterous relationship. When we give of ourselves our energy in a way that has nothing to do with holiness, that has nothing to do with helping someone, it's just a diversion. I know I'm speaking to a bunch of ladies, but in the sports world, for, I don't know if some ladies have that problem also, but the guy, that's what it is. It's I'm giving of my energy, attention, my passion to something else other than to Hashem and the Jewish people. And that's the same concept of an idolatrous relationship. That way, we don't have it to powers, stars and moons and other forces in the world. We're too far removed from that. But the concept is still out there. So Yitzchak represents that strength against that. So now you say, why does the Medrash say that Hashem said the Mishkan were not ready until... Not ready until the month of Nisan. Why does the Mishkan first need to be constructed in the month of Nisan? That's Yitzchak's month. Why is Yitzchak's month so critical to the construction of the Mishkan? Because what's the Mishkan represent? The Mishkan represents the return of the Shekhinah to the Jewish people. It represents the return of the divine presence in a physical body, so to speak, of the tabernacle. Why don't we have that? Why are we missing it on our own? Because of the Chetah Egel, because the Jewish people sinned and they diverted their attention. Who do we need? Whose shoulders do we need to stand on and say, we have what it takes to be entirely focused, we have what it takes to bring the Shekhinah back? We need to stand on the shoulders of Yitzchak Avinu. So to bring back the Mishkan, to actually reconstruct it, or erect it now for the first time, to put it up, and bring that divine presence down into the world after we've lost it because of the Chet HaEgel, because of our own actions pushed it aside, we need to stand on the shoulders of Yitzchak Avinu. Says the Medrash, even though it was completed on the 25th of Kislev, Shem says, the simcha that we're going to have when I put this up, the simcha that will exist when the divine presence rests in your midst, not till Nisan. It needs to be in the month that Yitzchak was born, as there's a Sefer Eitz Yosef who writes that the Tam Shehimtin, the reason why he waited, Mishum Shelo Sharsa Hashchina B'Mishkan Elo B'Zchus Yitzchak. It's only the merit of Yitzchak do the Jewish people have a Mishkan, because Yitzchak is that sense that this, we are entitled to this presence. We are entirely dedicated and focused on your service, and that's all represented in the personage of Yitzchak Avinu. Now we move to the back half of the Medrash. And then Hashem says, what about the month of Kislev? Poor Kislev, the Mishkan was completed on the 25th, and it is nothing to show for it. Hashem says, Alai Lahashma, I'll complete that. And when the Chashmonoim come in the Hanukkah story, that's where you'll have your Chanukah Samizbeach. There will be a dedication of the Mizbeach then. How come then we don't need the Zchutz, the merits of Yitzchak Avinu? Well, in one sense you could say that. We could say even better. You could say even better. During the Hanukkah story, so as we mentioned earlier, how did the sages describe what the Greeks did to the Jewish people? Kisru lachem al keren hashor, right on the horn of a shore, ein lanu chelek v'elokei Yisrael. We have no portion in the God of Israel. So he asked, what does the Cheta Ega, where does this fit into the hint that they wanted us to write it specifically on the horn of a shore? What does it have to do with the Hanukkah story? So when you think about what the Greek philosophy was, what was the battle of the Jewish people with the Greeks during the times of the Chashmonaim, the times of the Second Beis HaMikdash? So as you know, the Greeks didn't want to destroy us physically. They weren't interested in killing us. That's the Purim story. But Hanukkah, they wanted us there, but they wanted us to remove every connection that we have with Kedusha, every connection that we have with holiness, of Torah as a divinely inspired insight into the workings of Hashem Himself. It's a book, you can study it. In fact, we're going to be the first ones to translate it. Let it be open to everybody as an intellectual pursuit, for sure. But as Kedusha, as a connection to holiness, as a connection to eternity, as a connection to an Olam Haba, to another world, no such thing. And in the battle with the Greeks, so what do the Greeks say? How do they manifest that in the words of the sages? Take the Cheta Egel, which was a diversion of attention, which says, you're not totally focused on me, and on that writes, Ein lanu chelek v'elokei Yisrael. We have no portion in the God of the Jewish people. We're going to do what we need to do without a connection to the Jewish people. The Maharal writes as follows, L'kach omru v'Yisrael. This is why the Greeks told the Jewish people, Kisru al keren hashor, Ein lachem chelek v'elokei Yisrael, right on the horn of the ox, that you have no chelek. Ki mitzad ha-egel, it was because, in a direct result of the egel, she'ovdu Yisrael as the egel, that the Jewish people worshipped, miyad she'nosam lahem ha-Torah, that immediately upon being given the Torah, it's 40 days later, they're dancing around the golden calf. Dover zeh mored, that shows, teaches us, is an indication of, she'esh kan siluk ve'hafroda, the etzem shalom. There is a break, a parting of ways in our connection to Hashem. Meaning, as Rabbi Tapp said over many times over the weekend, you plant the seed in the beginning and it has its roots, it has its fruition months and years and decades, generations later. In the very beginning, right when the Torah was given, at that moment during your honeymoon, so to speak, right in the beginning, you went off. You allowed in to the genetic code, almost so to speak, a possibility that you're going to be mesulak, you're going to be separated and distanced from Hashem because you were diverted in that critical time period. The very beginning, when the Torah was given, we were off and we allowed ourselves to be distracted, so to speak, by Avodah Zarah. And as a result of that, the Maharal says that's what the sages are hinting at when they describe the Greek culture as writing it on the horn of a shore. Where do the sages see that? The sages are telling us what allowed for the Hanukkah story, what allowed for the Greeks to come in and cause such destruction, spiritually speaking. They traced it all back to the fact that we were distracted, right to the Cheta Egel, that we were off. We were able to worship something else. And therefore, the way the sages describe the whole Hanukkah story is, right on the horn, we have no portion in the God of Israel. You could have all your things you want, no Shabbos, no Rosh Chodesh. You could live, but you live like us, as cultured, enlightened Greeks, but not as holy, Kedoshim Jewish people. So how come we don't need a Yitzhak Avinu? How come we don't need a Yitzhak in order to be able to rededicate the Beis HaMikdash? If the whole story fits in, you have, in order to bring in the Shekhinah, you need to be able to fix that distraction that you once had. And in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu even, we needed the schus, the merit of Yitzhak, to stand on his shoulders and say, through his merit, his strength in not being into Avodah Zarah, we are entitled to the Shekhinah to dwell in our midst. In the Chashmonaim story, where is that? So the answer to that is in the Chashmonaim themselves. That is where the Hanukkah story, the heart of the Hanukkah story lies. In the words of the Bach is one of the commentators on the Torah. The Torah is a sefer which preceded the Shulchan Aruch, the body of Halacha. So when the Torah discusses the Halacha, the Bach writes as follows. He asks the question, which I've alluded to and I'm sure you've heard many, many times, the difference between Chanukah and Purim, that by Purim there's a mitzvah to have a seudah. You have to have a meal. It's part of the mitzvah of the day of Purim. And Chanukah, there's no such thing. The only mitzvah you have to do is light a candle. Says the Bach, the reason for that is because in Chanukah, the Iker HaGzeirah, the reason why we had this decree upon us is Al Shehishrashlu Va'avodah. We became weakened in our service to Hashem ourselves during the Chanukah story. We fell for what the Greeks wanted from us. We ourselves were not involved and passionate about our service of Hashem. And therefore, whenever we are weak, Hashem sends against us something which affects where we were weak. And therefore, what do we get? We got the Greeks. When we were weak in our service of Hashem, so we got the Greeks who levied Xeris upon us in the area of our service of Hashem. No Shabbos, and no mitzvos, and no bris milah. The ukeshechazru b'tshuva, says the Bach, what brought about the end of this Gzeirah, of this period of time where the Greeks were causing us all sorts of trouble. Kishechazu b'tshuva, when the Jewish people returned b'tshuva, limsor nafsham al ha'avoda. To be moser nefesh, to give of their life for the service of Hashem. What does it mean for a family of five to take up arms against the Greek nation? What does that mean? It means to say, if I can't live as a Jew, free to live as a Jew, to serve in the Beis HaMikdash as a Jew, to learn Torah and keep mitzvahs, I don't want this. I can't. Moser nefesh, taking up arms, fighting back and saying, this is the only way to go. There is no other way to have it. And we will go against all odds because there's no choice. There's no other way to be. When they were moser nefesh like that, and they took up the arms, and they fought an entire most powerful nation at the time, Hoshiyam Hashem. At that point, Hashem stepped in and saved them. Ayidei HaKohanim, and who specifically were those who stepped forward? It was the Kohanim, Ovdei HaAvoda, the Beis Hashem. Those who served in the Beis HaMikdash himself. Where was the Zchus of Yitzhak Avinu in the times of the Chashmonaim? It was the Chashmonaim. It was in their ability to stand up and say, we're also going to be Moser Nefesh for Avodah Zarah. A total dedication, a total focus, a total passionate plea of there is no other way to be other than like this. And when Hashem saw that Mesiris Nefesh, when He saw the level of dedication that they had, what they were willing to give up on and sacrifice in order to have a Beis HaMikdash, in order to be able to live as Jews are supposed to live, when they filled in that level of Mesiris Nefesh, Hashem stepped in and said, I will then save you. Al kei nasa hanes gam kein b'neiros. Therefore, says the Bach, was there a miracle with the candles. Tachas asher he'eru nafsham lamus al kiyum ha'avoda. In that which the Jewish people were ready to die and extinguish, so to speak, their flame of life on behalf of their service of Hashem. If we can't do it, I'm not ready. I'm not willing to do this. When they were willing to be moser nefesh like that, so what were they entitled to? A miracle with the candles. Lefikach lo kavum elo lahodos ulahalel shehavodah shebelev. And therefore there's no meal. This is not a gastronomic type of holiday. This is a spiritual holiday. It's only about a flame of halal and hodah, of praise and thanks, with the miracle of the candle. Now he only alludes to an idea which is expressed in a lot more other places at greater length. The candle, the ner ma'aravi, the eternal lights, was always symbolic of the presence of the Shekhinah which existed in the Beis HaMikdash. There was a constant miracle which took place that the light never went out. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, that miracle existed. In the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, it did not. The Mishnah lists things that did not exist. One of the things which was not perpetual in the second Beis HaMikdash was this Ner Ma'arovi, a constant light, representative of that presence of the Shekhinah in the Beis HaMikdash. Sometimes it did exist, sometimes it didn't, but it wasn't perpetual in the way that it was in the first Beis HaMikdash. And the most appropriate way for Hashem to show the Shekhinah is going to be back, there is a divine presence with you, on the fact that you have rededicated this Beis HaMikdash. This is again the second Chanukah's Beis HaShmonai. They rebuilt the Mizbeach. They threw out the old, which had been defiled, reconstructed a new one, rededicated that in the service of the Beis HaMikdash. And what would be more appropriate than having a miracle with a flame, that a flame which should have only lasted for one day should stay perpetually for eight, to be indicative, representative of the return of the Shechina, that's representative of the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash, the whole concept of the Mishkan through the Mesiris Nefesh, the sacrifice that the Chashmonaim were willing to have and put in to this entire battle, which was the same level as the Schus of Yitzchak. So going back in summary to the Medrash which says a phenomenal thing. The Medrash says that the initial Mishkan in the desert was completed on the 25th of Kislev. But it wasn't put up until Nisan, because the Mishkan represented the kapara, the atonement for the chait of the ego. The ego, which was a distraction, a diversion in our passion for our service of Hashem. When there was no passion and we were diverted, the chait ego, we lost the Shechina. And we only got it back with Moshe davening for 40 days specifically for that, standing on the shoulders of Yitzchak, who represents a total dedication to the service of Hashem, where we zocha, did we merit to have the Shechina return to the Jewish people. But the Medrash says that Hashem will replace the month of Kislev with their own Chanukah Sabayis, the rededication of the second Beis HaMikdash, where they threw out the old Mizbeach, built a new one, rededicated that, standing on their own shoulders, the Mesiris Nefesh for Ad Avodah, a dedication, a passion to say, I am entirely focused and dedicated, a life not being able to be lived with Torah Mitzvos and Shabbos and Bris Milah and all the other things in the Beis HaMikdash, be Meis Nefesh for. What else is there? And on that same level, standing on their own shoulders, so to speak, similar to that of Yitzchak, were they then entitled and saved by Hashem, brought back to the Beis HaMikdash, rededicated, and given this miracle of the light of the candle, which should remain burning, representative of that return of the Shechina to the Jewish people. That's what this time of Chanukah is about focusing in on this, the Mesiris Nefesh that the Chashmonaim had for their Avodah, for their service of Hashem at all costs. This is what has to be, and I'm willing to give up everything for it. And it was that focused, passionate Avodah, their Mesiris Nefesh, to be able to do that, is what brought about that rededication of the Chanukah Sabayis in the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, and this miracle of the Neris, which is representative of that. That's thoughts for Chanukah. A fair looking Chanukah to all of you.